Everybody, and welcome to the PC Gamer Show. My name is Tom Marks, assistant editor here at PC Gamer. Thank you for joining us as always. I'm joined today by Tim Clark, our editor-in-chief. How are you doing, Tim?
That's good. Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me back.
Of course, we always love having you on. And then also Tyler Wilde, executive editor. How are you doing, Tyler?
Good. I am also here, and I'm here. I don't think I've been on in a few weeks.
Yeah, neither of you have. It's been a while, so it's good to have you guys back. We've been sticking James and Will in every time everyone else is busy, but we're through the busy season.
Got the big guns now, Tom.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Through the busy season? What are you talking about?
I guess it's always the busy season, but I considered like that November-December period, that Gamageddon, right?
Yeah, that was pretty busy.
But we got a great show for you today. Tim was able to play some Far Cry Primal, so we're going to be talking about that game. We'll also be talking about The Witness, which just came out today, and I've had a small chance to play, and just kind of puzzle games, first-person puzzle games in general. Then we'll have the glorious return of the Cat Fantastic Quiz. I am really proud of this week's quiz. You guys will see what that is, but let's just say somebody found a way to make a Steam controller play music. And so we're going to be playing some songs for you guys, and you're going to have to guess what those songs are based on the Steam controller versions of them.
Are they songs from popular games or songs from popular culture?
They're songs from PC gaming.
Oh, my God.
No, yes. I'm going to do terrible.
I won't know anything.
You'll get some of them, I promise. Then we're also going to talk about Her Story 2 being announced, and then we'll, of course, close it out with our Twitch chat Q&A, where you guys can ask any questions you may have. But let's start the show off as we usually do. And, Tim, what have you been playing recently?
As you alluded to, Tom, I spent about 4 hours at the tail end of last week playing Far Cry Primal at a preview event Ubisoft held here in San Francisco. It was only playable on PlayStation 4, so I played it on PlayStation 4. And I've also been playing... I wrote a thing on the site about Don't Starve Shipwrecked, which is the new DLC for the Clay survival, whimsical goth survival game. Although it's actually been outsourced to Capybara.
Right.
Do the Super Time Force thingy.
And that's the kind of tropical, oceany one.
Yeah, you're on like an archipelago of islands. There's new mobs, new character. He's got a surfboard. There's a lot of kind of boat building. It's quite a different dynamic, actually, because it's still a huge map, but you have to explore. You can't just kind of turtle up at a base because... you need to get gold and all that other sort of some pretty key crafting items early. So you really do have to make some sort of seafaring vessel and start exploring early on. I actually found it quite hard because they've released a roadmap for stuff they're going to do. Because the way the Clay games always work, it's in early access, and they haven't implemented the big monsters yet, and there's a lot of balance stuff still to be done. And yeah, they released this roadmap of what's happening, and one of the things is there's you can get poisoned by snakes that pop out of trees and bushes you cut down, and also by... Were there poisonous crabs? No, but there are poisonous... there's three or four different things that will poison you, and if you get poisoned, your health basically ticks out in about 2 minutes, and you need some pretty specific stuff to make the anti-venom serum. You need the poison gland, which will drop from a poison thing, but it's an RNG drop. So basically, if you're poisoned, you're can we swear?
Yeah,
you're fucked if you're poisoned, unless it's late game and you've already crafted it. Some people have been complaining about that, but I enjoyed that a lot. And then I wouldn't say burned out on it, but then it made me go back and revisit original Don't Starve. And then from that, I gradually persuaded my other half to come and play Don't Starve together with me, which I'd kind of glossed over and just not played for some reason. I think I played so much of the original Don't Starve that by the time Together came out, I felt almost done with it. So going back to it now and playing it as pure co-op, we play on just the server with the two of us in endless mode. There's three different flavors of it. And in endless mode, you can resurrect from a jury-rigged portal because otherwise you turn into a ghost. But there's you lose a chunk of health. And I've just been honestly having an amazing time with that. Really, really enjoying partly because I suppose we're in the same room, so we're not having to type in... chat commands to each other. So being able to like split the labor and like discuss strats for kind of like we were trying to fend off the deerclops, you know, the giant one-eyed winter beast that was stomping through our camp, and we were I won't bore you with how we did it, but we managed to survive for another couple of days anyway before we froze to our sad deaths. It was just really fun, and it's one of those games where like I'm now really like looking forward to going back and jumping back on it together. It's a bonding experience.
Cool. That's very cool. Yeah, I remember you and I played a little bit of Don't Starve Together way back when it was first in beta or early access or whatever they were calling it. And yeah, it seemed fun. I mean, I've been playing a game similar to Don't Starve at first glance called Crashlands, and I actually reviewed it for the site. And it was interesting because it looks a lot like Don't Starve. It's basically the same kind of perspective. It's that same sort of hand-drawn-ish art style, although Don't Starve has a... Crashlands goes for more cartoony, while Don't Starve goes for, like, sketchy, I guess. But there's no survival elements, and that was something that actually surprised me, was there's no hunger, there's no thirst in Don't Starve, there's the sanity thing or whatever, and there's none of that. And it was more a game focused on action and combat and completing quests for these really horrible but cute-looking, kind of, if that makes sense, like, citizens of this planet. But the thing that caught me about Crashlands was actually that it was designed for mobile and PC, and the developers were very, very... they were emphasizing this idea that it doesn't matter which one you play it on, it'll be a good experience on both. And while the game was fun, I felt like they actually paced it incorrectly for PC. They were pacing it for mobile so that... You know, that kind of classic survival action crafting game arc of, you know, get a crafting bench, build some cool things, get the next crafting bench, build some more cool things, which usually is, like, spread out pretty far, was happening so quickly that it just kind of made my actions feel hollow to a certain extent.
I read in your review as well, I thought an interesting point you made was that when you got new weapons and stuff, they would almost invariably be strictly better than the old ones you had because the perks on the old ones were interesting, but they weren't powerful enough that they would outweigh like a damage increase from something new. So it kind of robbed you of choice a little bit.
Yeah, and there was probably one or two times where I didn't just automatically choose the better thing, the next tier. And that was usually when I had one of the legendary weapons where you would have this really, really low chance of like just getting a random drop from a resource that would get you a legendary thing. But it happened so infrequently that, and then also those legendary weapons, you're usually just obsoleted and like two tiers instead of one, so it was interesting. I mean, and it's disappointing that I felt that way about the combat kind of pace, or not the combat, excuse me, the pacing of the game, because the combat was really fun. I thought the writing was really funny. Like, it's some of, like, the most kind of clever, silly writing I've seen in a game in a while. So I was like, I came away from it a little disappointed, and it actually made me want to go back and play Don't Starve a little bit.
How much does it cost?
Crashlands is only $15. Okay. So it's not like it's this big epic thing that it is a long game. It's probably like 20 hours, you know, but
it's interesting what you're saying as well about the time. You saying you felt like you had seen enough in kind of 1 hour chunks, whereas with something like Don't Starve, I was playing it because I've been playing it for the last two weekends, and I'll play for like 4 and almost 5 hour chunks at a time. And I know because I was listening to like a podcast series, and I would burn through like 8 episodes in one playthrough, and then I'd die and lose everything. And then you start questioning what you've done with your weekend.
I was a bit grump about Crashlands because I played it for a bit and I couldn't get over the like hopping animation of your character. I found it so annoying. Like, instead of a running animation, you just have this like skip where he just like does the splits, or she does the splits, like, and bounces around, and I was like, this is infuriating. I couldn't play it after just seeing the animation.
See, I liked a lot of the animations. I thought the art, too. Some of the coolest parts about that game was actually like the boss fights were awesome. The boss fights were these really well-animated, cool, unique creatures, and they were really engaging. It felt like, I called it in the review, too, it said it felt like MOBA combat, almost, right? You were, like, dancing a lot and, like, tapping, because it was all done through the mouse. Yeah, I liked the animations. I was not nearly as much of a grump as you were.
It's okay, I only like games where like everything is like rotting and bloody and.
Well, what have you been playing recently, Tyler?
I just started playing Darkest Dungeon again. That came out of early access. We just posted a review. That's what I was referring to when I said bloody. That's a really cool, interesting game. I don't have a lot new to say about it from since the last time I played it, but I mean, basically, you're sort of managing this town outside of your family estate, and beneath the estate, you know, your father dug down into dungeons and naturally awakened forces of evil.
Like you do.
Yeah. So you're sending adventurers in there, and if they make it out alive, you know, with some loot or whatever, they'll usually end up with some kind of, like, horrible mental toll, and so they end up with traits where they'll sort of, like, disrespect your orders and do things and freak out and move around, you know, because positioning is kind of an important part of it. But it's cool. You don't see a whole lot of games, like, consider that, you know, diving into dark dungeons with the forces of evil tormenting you would
More the long-term consequences.
Yeah, would actually not be, like, a great job. Usually it's like, you know, everyone just goes, you know, in Diablo, it's just like, well, yeah, you know, clearly I've now cleared out the skeletons, and I'll return to this grimy graveyard and go to the ominous city where, yeah, and everyone's fine with it. It's just that's life, man. Skeletons.
Maybe that's the powerful treatise on the nature of violence in fantasy worlds. You become addicted to the
could be
the endless slaying. You know, you can't go back.
I'm obviously always playing Rocket League, so that's just a given whenever I do these. And I had a good match the other night.
What is the Rocket League community like now? Because I only follow it. I play it very occasionally, and I've seen people complaining more and more that the level of kind of patience with players making mistakes is kind of eroding and people are more and more mean. Is that fair or not?
Yeah, I'd agree that when I first started playing it, there was kind of a general contract between the players that we're all having fun, and if you score an own goal, it's like, no problem. And you still get, like, a good group a lot of the time. I'd say most of the time when I play ranked, I play with people who are, you know, if you have a bad game or something, they don't get pissed off, but you know, there's like 1 in 10 where someone rage quits or or starts yelling at the team. Maybe more than 1 in 10, because a lot of times I'll see the other team too, because I'm just so good. Yeah. So it's not my team yelling at me.
Obviously.
It's the other team, and there's always that one guy who goes like, "My teammates suck," and you know they're losing, and he has to blame it on everyone else, which is annoying.
Do you ever play with the same people? Like,
no,
you haven't formed your little Rocket League guild.
I haven't, which is weird because I always think about it when I play, like, a really good match with a couple of people, and I'm like,
we could be friends.
We could be internet friends and play Rocket League together. But I never follow through and, like, go through my, like, previous Steam and say,
it's disappointing.
I don't know.
I bet they'd accept.
I don't have the social, like,
you don't want to be the first one to reach out. You don't want to be that guy.
If someone, like, messaged me on Steam and said, hey, that was fun, do you want to play again sometime? I might, but I don't know. I feel like I have also sometimes there's pressure to like, because I'll jump in and I just want to play like one or two rounds, and someone on Steam will see that I'm playing and be like, oh, let's party up. And I'm like, okay. But then immediately I'm like, oh, but I only wanted to play one or two. And now I've committed to, now I got to play like 5, 10.
Out of curiosity, what rank are you in if you play ranked? What division?
Oh, I'm still pretty low, like the top of the bronze, basically, because I'm just solo queuing, and I'll play ranked sometimes, but I mainly play unranked because it's just, I don't know. I think you get a little bit less of the whining, and if someone rage quits, someone else can join, versus in ranked, where if someone quits, then whatever team has two players is now has two players and is pretty much screwed.
Twitch chat user Percy actually said that he thinks that silver is the most toxic, because that's the point where, let me read what he says, because people know what they want to do but can't pull it off.
Yeah.
So. Oh, but like at gold, people are like, they're so good, they're more respectful.
Yeah, gold is where people like can do what they want, okay. But silver apparently is the place
that... I mean, it's the community police at all. I ask because I said I wasn't going to mention Hearthstone, but I am going to. I got my favorite. I don't get that many rage messages, maybe because I don't win enough. But I got a friend request from someone I beat at the weekend, and he said, "How can I say this? That's all right." He said, "How many times have you Orally pleasured Ben Brode, who is the senior game designer on Hearthstone, and then went on to like a diatribe about the luck I'd had in the game. I'd got like the card Malorn, which is basically like a giant mystical druid horse for free twice off of other cards, and he I think he considered, he was all right with the first one, but the second one I think pushed him over some sort of tipping point.
They're changing how ranked works in Rocket League, so I'll probably try harder once that change goes through, because I'm not sure how transparent the system is going to be, but the idea is that it won't penalize you for having a few losing streaks. Like getting to a new rank is like the sum of all your skill in the previous rank, and at some point some algorithm decides you can move up, but it's not just a strictly like Hearthstone, it's not just a strictly like you need to have more wins than losses to move up.
How often does the rank reset, or does it reset?
This is, so the second season is when they're changing it, so it hasn't reset yet. Okay. But I guess your rank in the first season will apply to your starting rank in the second season, so maybe I have to...
You've got like a Rocket League ELO in the background?
Maybe I should grind a bit. yeah, but I guess they are doing that. They're trying to like measure your skill irrespective of whether you might have lost a couple games in a row.
Yeah. I feel like grinding is the best way to not like a game anymore, so
yeah.
You could just do that. Yeah.
Trying to rank up is always hard, like as you know from Hearthstone. Like when you go into it and sit down and like, I'm going to, you know, increase my rank tonight, and then you lose three in a row.
Then you feel bad.
And then, yeah, you're just mad.
The biggest problem I've always had with Hearthstone is that I love like almost everything about the game. I love just interacting with the cards, everything to do with it, the community, all sorts. My problem is myself and my emotional reaction to winning and losing. So when I win, the high is so much that I'll kind of like, I'll be wandering around thinking about how great I played it and how satisfying it was to finally smash the other guy's face in. But then when I lose, I just feel like this kind of gnawing pit of despair, which is super dumb because it's a game like with RNG absolutely baked into every aspect of it. And most times you can play pretty well and still lose just a bad draw. But there's been almost no other game in my gaming life where I felt like the high's so high and the low's so low. I sound like a junkie scum, don't I? I play it in like quite short bursts because I find it like so... I don't know how the guys who stream it professionally do it, because you see them getting like burned out or cross or frustrated, but like the thought of playing even something I love like that for 8 hours is nuts. Whereas with something like Don't Starve I was talking about earlier, like going to what you were saying, Tom, about grind, I like grinding games. If it's a game where I think probably because I'm a bit OCD, like if there's a game where I really understand the systems and I find them satisfying to interact with, I'll just sit there like playing with them, tinkering for almost an infinite amount of time.
Well, the crafting and survival games are also kind of tuned to that, right?
Yeah.
Like, I used to do that with Minecraft, right? I used to just sit there and play for hours and
hours.
It's
busy work, yeah. It's
yeah,
colorful busy work.
To a certain extent. And so I think that it's fair to think that you don't get in, that you can sit there and play Don't Starve, but you couldn't do that with Hearthstone. Because it is like a toll. Even if you don't mind losing very much, losing 20 times in, you know, a matter of hours is like, that's just... That drags on you no matter what.
What would you say the most number of consecutive Hearthstone games you've ever lost have been?
Ever lost?
Yeah, consecutive.
I'm not even really sure. I want to say probably like 6.
Yeah, I reckon I've done like between 8 and 12. Like went on like just a disaster streak. But equally, I've won that many several times, you know.
But honestly, it's I like you, I don't sit and just kind of play like hours and hours and hours at a time. I'll like throw in a few games here and there.
That's why I like doing the arena, because I just, you know, either I'm out immediately after three and I can just be like, screw it, and then just quit the game. Or if I get one win, I'll be like, I got one win.
the weird thing is, when I get onto like, I think it's an anxiety thing. Like I wrote about like ladder anxiety, which was kind of a thing that was first talked about in relation to StarCraft 2, where people would get really nervous about hitting the solo queue button because they didn't want to mess their MMR up or, you know, lose what achievements they felt they'd gained. And I find that, like, I'm much more, like, I'll get, like, almost like a, you almost get that kind of acid reflux in your stomach when you first start. But once I'm a couple of games in, I'm usually just, oh yeah, it's just half stone, it's fine. Like, and then I'll just get annoyed and switch it off. But there's, it's so much of it is psychological. One of the things I want to do on the Pro Channel on PC Gamer this year actually is speak to some sports psychologists and talk about that sort of stuff, because I think it's not interest. It's not only interesting from the player's perspective, but I think it's also interesting from a design perspective of like, how do you create like a system of like ranks and rewards, be that, you know, the way, you know, Rocket League or League Legends does it, so that players feel like incentivized and satisfied, but then don't feel punished when it goes wrong. And I think Arsene did, like, for a long time, a very bad job of doing that. Like, you just got a card back if you got to Legend, or you got a card back if you got to rank 20, and there was nothing in between. Now they have it spaced out, so you get different rewards and different stuff. But I think, like, all games which want to now have like a persistent audience that keeps playing month after month after month has to think very hard about, especially competitive games, about how they retain players with those sorts of encouragements without you them feeling bummed out if you miss them.
Yeah, I agree. Well, since you did say you weren't talking about Hearthstone.
Yeah, I've blown that, haven't I? Sorry, right, no more. No
but
more.
Let's move on. Let's talk about the other game that you played recently, which is Far Cry Primal. And for those of you who don't know, Far Cry Primal is now the... It started off, we thought it was going to be like what Blood Dragon was to Far Cry 3, but now it's actually like a proper Far Cry sequel. It is the next game in the Far Cry line after 4. And it's set some X number of years in the past in the time 10,000 of Mastodons. 10,000 BC, okay. And it's
Central
kind of like...
Europe.
Like caveman-y themed, right? Mm-hmm. And you got a chance to play it on PS4, unfortunately, because they didn't have PC builds. But what did you think from your, 4 hours playing with it?
I thought many things, which I shall now try and impart to you. I felt like So going into it, I've been chatting to Chris Livingston on our team, and he was just kind of like, it's a gun game without any guns. That's bullshit. It's going to be really boring. And his sort of quite dry way. And I definitely went into it thinking, geez, maybe Chris is right, this is not going to work at all. And I came out of it surprised by the fact that the combat and the general the experience of kind of like encountering the enemy warriors and the wildlife wasn't boring. I found like stalking them with a spear and with the bow and arrow and your stone mallet was fun, because you had to get you had to play it differently to a first person shooter, because neither of you had guns. It wasn't about kind of like using cover so much and then like, you know, thinning enemies out and then whatever. It was more about like, how do I close the distance, how do I sneak up on them. There's still you can still kind of land headshots with a bow and arrow, but so I was pleased that stuff, that kind of like cat and mouse stuff, did feel fun. But at the same time, it is really just like Far Cry without guns. And what I mean from that is, if you've played the hunting stuff in Far Cry 3 or Far Cry 4, you really do know what this feels like. So how enthusiastic you are for that would depend on personal preference. What I would have loved from the game, because I think like it was a game where when it was announced last year, there was like a huge response from the readers on the site, like really big interest in it. I think because people maybe had got a little bit bored with the current Far Cry formula, as good as those games are. And going into this, I kind of wanted it to be like more different than it actually is. I wanted the characters to be like lithe and athletic and feel like really savage and powerful and be kind of like hurtling around the countryside in 10,000 BC Central Europe, like really like kind of, you know, like the battle scenes in like Last of the Mohicans, or if you've seen Bone Tomahawk we were talking about on Amazon, which is absolutely horrible by the way, but recommended. I wanted that kind of like savagery to it, and it doesn't feel like that. It just feels like Far Cry dude hasn't got his guns, and the Far Cry engine is quite solid. And there was stuff like, if you got like kind of hit, or you did one of your, the melee stuff is bad by the way, like the melee stuff is really basic, like Skyrim basic, like just swish swish swish, like the animation is good, but the actual, there's no kind of like thought really to the combat.
That really surprised me, because I mean, Ubisoft is kind of known for having all these different franchises and then mushing them together into its biggest games. Like Far Cry and Assassin's Creed share all kinds of elements between each other, and then they've got For Honor, they've got this big melee combat game coming. Like, why aren't those systems shared? It seems weird that it's just a smash smash and not. At least, like, do you have, like, a block, at least, or, like, a heavy attack?
You didn't have a light or heavy attack that I noticed, and you didn't have a block that I noticed. What you had was, like, a spear, which you would kind of use at medium range, which was powerful, but in really limited supply. You can set fire to all your weapons. You can upgrade them to be slightly more powerful, yada, yada. But, like, none of that stuff was Like, the fire propagation works like it does in other Far Cries. What you do have is, like, Beastmaster powers. So, like, you can have, like, a wolf or a badger.
Of course you do.
I wrote down what the badger could do, but now I forget. The badger had some ability that was useful, but to the point where, like, once you've got a bear, I can't think why you would ever go, actually, this is more of a badger-type scenario. I'm going to go with the badger.
Yeah, this calls for a badger. The most, like, Far Cry thing about it I saw from the trailer wasn't the character, like, controlling an owl and basically, like, marking targets with the owl?
Yeah, the owl is like a fucking predator drone. You go ding, ding, ding. But not only that, like, it doesn't just mark targets. It can attack them. The owl can drop, like, these, like...
Please just say bombs.
I want to say bombs, yeah. Like, I can't remember what the explanation was. When you first meet the owl, this shaman guy sets you up with it. And you go on this, like, vision quest thing where you're, like, flying behind the owl. And straight away I was like, oh, it's flight controls. And flew straight into the ground. And the owl goes, grr!
I hate it when flight controls aren't inverted. Is that what it was?
It was, like, a proper plane. So, like, down to pull up.
Oh, okay. So that's what I would expect.
Yeah, but, like, I've just been playing a first-person shooter where, like, look up is up. So I was, like, completely thrown. So the owl, yeah, you complete this, like, psychedelic quest. And then after that, you can, like, tame other animals. If the animal gets, like, hurt, then you have to feed it meat. What I did like is there's a pet button, so you can stroke it whenever you want.
Oh, that's...
That was super satisfying, no joke. Vital.
I mean, that's the part that sells you on
After Metal Gear Solid 5, I don't think you can have a pet companion
I know.
Without a lot of caring and loving interaction.
There are signature animals as well, in the same way there was, like, signature guns. Do you remember in, like, Far Cry 3? Like, special ones you have to complete certain...
This is just sounding like Pokemon.
Well, you see, so for these, like, so initially, the first thing you'll do in the game, you're Takar, who's, like, this dude from the Wenja tribe, and you'll in a cutscene, see your pals get eaten by this saber-toothed tiger, and later on, he had a name, I can't remember, Blood something. You'll come to a point fairly early in the game, I think, where there'll be like a big area you can hunt that tiger in, and once I guess you've tamed him, they're unlockable permanently. And like you can like summon them from the menu using resources, so somehow like using 3 red ferns plus 2 slate stacks will summon you the tiger. And it's pretty what I did like was so there are 2 antagonist tribes. There's the Udam, who are like the headhunter cannibal guys, and then there's the Izila, who are the more sort of like advanced, you know this because they've got blue makeup, advanced tribe. They've like mastered fire and stuff, so they're the 2 tribes that are both trying to wreck your camp. And I was attacking an Azila camp where I'd like swum up through a cave system, was like picking some people off, and then I like summoned my attack bear. And the bear was like, the bear's pretty cool, like it was like still fighting even though I'd been shot with loads of arrows and stuff. And but there's no subtlety to it. You just go like, bear, attack that man. The bear attacks them. I mean, bears aren't sold, like, so I don't know, what do I want from Ubisoft at this point?
So it's crazy to me that a lot of what Ubisoft was talking about in the lead-up to this game was, like, how they really wanted to make it, like, as kind of realistic-ish as they could. But then when you talk about, like, summoning your bear and your, like, attack drone owl, it just sounds like at a certain point they were like, okay, we're going to make it a game to
do. But that's the mistakes made. They should, like, someone in the comments said, like, so what, there are no dinosaurs? And I was like, yeah, dude, like, when you say it like that, there should be. It would be like, if like, end act one, a Tyrannosaurus Rex, like, comes around the corner, that would be badass, in my opinion. I mean, not presumably historically accurate.
I think
accurate,
they're going for authenticity, which is distinct from realism, you know.
But authentic cavemen would be like, you're dead at 16 or whatever from some horrible disease. You live a life of hunger and pain. Whereas, like, so they make it a big play out of... they brought in linguists to make a cave person language, and then it's like subtitled. And then I couldn't take that seriously because they're all going like, and then the English is like, just have them talk English. Like, you've just made pointless work for yourself here. It didn't make me think like, oh, this is a fascinating window into the lives of actual caves people.
I love that they send you to what's supposed to basically be Nepal, right, in Far Cry 4, and everyone speaks English inexplicably, but then they go 10,000 years or 13,000 years or 12,000, whatever the number is, I'm terrible at math, back in the past, and like suddenly they're like, oh no, it would be weird if they were speaking English, right? Like, Every Ubisoft game ever that's set in another country, they're just like, nah, they'll just speak English with a British accent. And then this game, they're like, no, we got to make up a language.
If you want to see some, we've got some footage on the site, which I took at the event, and we've cut into like a kind of 5-minute preview with me saying much of the same sort of stuff I'm saying now. But I recommend seeking it out because there is me smashing a tortoise to death with a club. And it's probably one of the most shameful episodes in my career writing about games.
You're losing sleep over the tortoise you murdered.
I put the video on Facebook and my mother complained. She said, be nice to tortoises. So we used to have a tortoise. She should talk. We had two tortoises. One escaped and came back with like chew marks on its shell from a fox. Ooh, and then we were like, well, thank God the tortoise is back and alive. And then we lost it again, like a couple of weeks later.
How do you lose tortoises so much?
They're slow as well, right? I mean, like, yeah, they shouldn't be able to make a getaway.
Yeah, you'd think.
Sorry about that.
And we did just drop, if you are watching live, we did just drop the link to that in Twitch chat. But you can just go to pcgamer.com/far-cry and it'll be there as well.
So do you want to know more about it or not?
Yeah, please.
So the structure of the game is... just like other Far Cry's, insofar as you have to go out into the open world, collect tons of resources, like you scrape up bits of slate and then you find different types of wood, and then you can craft different pouches and packs and weapon upgrades, and then you can carry more stuff. And all the time while you're doing this, you're completing like the story missions and the you know, tons of side missions. You'll come across more of your Wenger tribe people, and they'll be like, you know, being attacked or whatever. Rescue them, and then you fill up your base back home. You know, like in these games, you've always got like a homestead.
Right.
You kind of collect kind of like signature Wenger characters, like these the ones with special abilities, and then you have to build them a hut, and then you have to upgrade their hut, and as you do that unlocks more nodes for like the tribe or for yourself. It's one of those things, like, you know, like Ubisoft games where like I feel like there's a point, like, 2 or 3 hours in when it dawns on you just how much stuff there's going to be to do. Like, going back to what you were saying about grind, Tom, like, you know when you look at, like, the Assassin's Creed map and there's literally 400 things on it and you're kind of like...
That's the point when I quit,
holy
usually.
Holy smoke, yeah.
When I open up the map and it's got, like, you know, 30 different icons just in one area I'm in.
Yeah. Well, because...
I can't take a to-do list that long.
Sean Prescott, who writes for us out of the Australia office... he went to see the game as well and has done the text preview on the site. And we were talking about the skill tree. And I think Sean worked out, like, Takar has, like, 80 different skills. You can see them in a video we put in his preview. So it's a lot.
Yeah.
I think if you've enjoyed the previous couple of Far Cry games and you want to, like, a change of pace, a change of scene, you're going to enjoy it fine. Like, I spent 4 hours with it. At the end of those 4 hours, I was like, oh, that was more fun than I thought it was going to be, but also probably had, like, not a huge desire to spend another 20 hours in it.
Right.
Felt like I'd tried it out, and it was fine.
The most disappointing thing to me from what you've said so far is just the idea that the melee combat didn't receive maybe the love that I was expecting. Because it seems like if you're going to pitch Far Cry but without the guns, you need to make the melee combat better, right? Because... at a certain point, throwing spears and stuff like that is going to get old, I feel.
I think if I had been on the design team, and there's many reasons why I'm not on any design teams, so take this with a pinch of salt, I would have tried to make it so like the actual use of all those weapons felt far more dynamic and exciting. Like I would have made it so like every time you fire a bow, it's kind of like really kind of like dramatic. It's not to say like the combat is bad. Like smashing guys' heads in was fine. There was just nothing to it. Like the animation is good. It looks nasty, and you feel like you're connecting. They weren't like bullet sponges, the equivalent of bullet like club sponges, where you have to like wail on them forever. Guys would die pretty quickly. There was just no subtlety to it at all. And I think you're right. Like in an era of games where like close quarter combat is done pretty well in a few games now, it definitely felt a bit like they just hadn't had enough time to do it.
Well,
I'm being generous there.
We can move on from Far Cry Primal. Do keep an eye out at PCGamer.com for more coverage of that, and especially as we start to actually get to play the PC version of it. But let's talk about a PC game that PSP and I guess also PS4 that just came out today called The Witness. And this is a game that I am so excited for. Oh man,
it's
I am
a
excited
Tom game.
For. This is a Tom game.
It's a Tom game, not a Tim game. That's how I build it.
Yeah, you were looking over James's shoulder earlier, just like repulsed.
It's not for me.
I saw Jonathan Blow talk actually at UCLA when I was still there about 3 years ago, and he was showing off at that point a playable version of the game. So 3 years later, and there's now like all that detail added to it is just, I'm really excited to dive into it. We gave it a very good review on the site. I believe it was an 89. And you can read that full review. I'll post in the chat right now. But I'm just pumped. It's a first-person puzzle game, for those of you who don't know, but it's more of a first-person puzzle game in the style of the Talos Principle rather than Myst. And the way I make that distinction, because I do want to talk about first-person puzzle games in general, is Myst's puzzles were all very weird and abstract, right? They were, they weren't just like, press these buttons in the right order. Or in the case of The Witness, they're all basically mazes, and you have to, each of the mazes has a different set of rules of how you can navigate the maze, essentially. Whereas the Talos Principle, it was basically like all the first person walking around sort of stuff was just sort of a menu screen for the puzzles almost. Mm. And it added...
You're saying it's not like that in The Witness?
No, I'm saying it is like that. It's kind of a mix from what I can tell so far. Whereas Myst, it was like all these environmental puzzles, and Talos Principle was very in-your-face, like you walk through a gate and you're suddenly in a puzzle area, and then you solve that puzzle and leave that area. Mm-hmm. The Witness is kind of a mix, where you're walking around this big uninhabited island, and you're using your observations to kind of decide where you want to go, to figure out certain puzzles. The world influences the solutions to those puzzles. You have to be observant. But at the same time, when you are actually solving a puzzle, you are looking at a panel on the ground or on the wall, and you have to solve a little maze puzzle. So there is a world where The Witness didn't have first person, right, and was just a series of puzzles. Like, that could have existed, where that could never exist with something like Myst. And I'm just really excited to jump into it, because it's supposed to be like 30 to 40 hours, something like that, and it's over 600 of these puzzle panels.
600 puzzle panels?
Something like that.
Oh my god.
Wow. I'm really excited. I'm just...
And they're all mazes?
I think so. I'm not entirely sure. Like I said, I've only played about 30 minutes of the game.
I don't know if I would call it a maze, per se. It's kind of like the game Line, which is L-Y-N-E, but seems like with more variations, right? Where you have, like, dots that might have different properties, and you kind of have to figure out what it's asking you to do. It is amazing that you're, like, drawing a line from one end to the other, but there are, like, special rules you have to learn. Like, oh, you have to block off all the white dots or something, or yeah, you have to surround all the dots that are like this on the way. So you have to find, like, the one perfect route to move the line through past all these dots.
But I like, in, I can't remember who reviewed it now for us.
Was it Edwin? I think it was Edwin.
Yeah, it was Edwin.
Yeah.
I liked what Edwin was saying about how the game doesn't hold your hand as much in like an explicit way. It's not like you press this button to do this thing, right? This puzzle is solved this way. Now solve the other ones. It just like lets you figure it out. And that sort of implicit teaching is done everywhere that I've seen so far, where I loaded the game and it did a little loading screen, and then it just puts you in the game. There's no menu, right? And you walk up to the first panel and it's just a straight line, and that's how it starts teaching you. And then when you first get out, and this is after like two puzzle panels, so I'm not spoiling anything. When you first get out, you start to walk up this staircase, and in your view through the staircase out the door is this mountain with a thing on top of it, and that's where you need to end up at the end of the game, right? Like, that's the goal of the game. So right off the bat, the second it lets you explore the island, it's showing you your goal literally through a doorway, so it's the only thing you can see, and then it lets you out and lets you explore. And I really love subtle things like that. And not always the puzzle panels aren't always in order, right? Sometimes you have these series of panels, but other times, you'll activate a panel and it'll make a cable kind of glow and go off into the bushes. And then you have to follow that cable to find the next one. So there's lots of just implied teachings that I'm really excited to just kind of dive into more.
What's the multiplayer like? Capture the flag or team deathmatch?
Yeah, I don't think so. I'd love to see somebody mod that island into like a different game, because it's beautiful, right? The graphics are amazing on it.
Yeah, it is a really good looking game. I'd like to play the team deathmatch where you have to like solve the puzzles
against the clock.
Yeah, faster than the other team.
But
do you think for someone like me with no spatial awareness or ability to solve puzzles,
it's going to enjoy it? It'd be harder, but I think you'd still be able to get through it.
I got stuck on. Do you remember that? I saw someone say, "Isn't it like one of those iOS games, like The Room, but just with a forest around it?" Is that unfair?
I haven't played it enough to know specifically, but that might be somewhat fair. That's like an escape the room game, right? It's basically...
They're like, you get like a weird... They're more like 3D puzzles, aren't they? You get like an object and you've got to kind of like manipulate it and then go, oh, like, there's the...
If we're being pedantic, couldn't you say that any game is just like the room but bigger?
No.
No?
I think you could, no.
Okay. Well, so a question I had, though, and I wanted to, with talking about this, is what do you guys think? Do you think first person in puzzle games like this, like, what do you think it serves? You know, why?
I was going to ask you that. I mean, like, because it's, I mean, like you said, it's connective tissue, isn't it, fundamentally, between the puzzles. But then if there is, like, if they are informing you and giving you clues about what to expect and how to interact with it, and also, like, I mean, obviously, there's the effect it's having on you as a player, like what, how it makes you feel being in that world.
Playing the Seventh Guest puzzles in order, like if they just, like, if it went next puzzle, would be a totally different experience from playing the Seventh Guest, where it's like, oh, I'm in a spooky house and like my life is on the line as I solve these puzzles. And I know that's probably not the feeling Jonathan Blow is going for. Like, it doesn't seem like there's any danger to you.
No, and one of the things that I know Jonathan Blow, the designer, mentioned beforehand, and I was kind of expecting going into it, was that there's no music in the game whatsoever. He hinted that there was one song hidden somewhere. I bet it's something to do with a puzzle, right? But there's no music, and when I got out into this world and I was just only hearing, like,
bird song.
No birds. There's no animals, no bugs, or anything on the island.
Wind?
So you're hearing the wind through the trees, you're hearing your footsteps, and basically that's it. And it was way more haunting than I expected it to be. Because you could very clearly tell that there was sound, right? Because you had all of these exterior noises. But the fact that it was just silent besides that was really haunting.
He's stolen that from Ico. Ico was just wind, wasn't it, pretty much?
Yeah, I think that's true. Wait, there was music, though, wasn't there?
Yeah.
But yeah, going back to what you said, yeah, I think it is a lot of connective tissue, because Talos Principle would be a completely different game, too, if it didn't have its audio logs and stuff like that. I think that it's almost, and I get the feeling that this is not the case in The Witness, that The Witness uses its first person and its world more than that. But I get, it is a lot of just atmosphere building.
Is the world the reward, essentially, that you're seeing more of it each time you progress? Like, because if it was just a series of mazes in a menu, who would give a shit?
Yeah.
Other than people wanting just to test themselves against increasingly hard mazes, which there would be a group of people who would want to do that. But the fact... Well, presumably, how much is gated off depending on, like, you needing to solve X puzzles? Like, is that you don't get to move to the next area until you've done them, or is it you can just roam around finding new puzzles?
I think the way it works, and don't hold me to this because I haven't gotten through it yet, but I believe the way it works is that there are 11 kind of areas in the world and or on the island, and you need to solve completely 7 of them to beat the game.
Right.
And those areas are sort of, from what I understand, a little bit more linear. Obviously, you can explore, and you have to explore to figure out where you need to go next. But from what I can tell, there is progression, like you're saying.
But is there scaling difficulty between, like, puzzles 1 to 5 versus puzzles 305 to 309? Like, are those later ones going to be much harder?
I get the feeling, yes. I mean, even...
You can tell I don't know anything about this.
Even what we were watching with James, you know, he walked up to a series of 8 panels all next to each other in a row, and the very first ones he blew through, and then he got to panel, like, 7, and suddenly it was stuck. And I think the game is going for that kind of scaling of difficulty.
Okay.
That's the impression I get.
Are you going to play it, Tyler?
Yeah, I'll probably play it. when they may, as
Just
long
so
as
that
it,
when people talk about it at GDC, you don't feel left out.
Yeah. Well, I thought Braid was okay, but I didn't really like the package as a whole. I thought it was... I don't know. I wasn't into that. But The Witness... sorry, I sound like... I sound like an old lounge singer all of a sudden.
Yeah, you got Tom Waits going on.
Yeah. But the Witness seems a little bit less interested in its story, but I don't know that. But I'd be okay with just walking around a place and solving some puzzles.
Just doing yourself 600 puzzles.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to beat it. It makes me think of, like, what if they took Sudoku books and then, like, every five pages there was just a little short story about a glade. And then you keep, then you continue.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. James and Mybeard's in the chat wants me to say, or says, don't forget about that gray cloud.
Oh, yeah.
Because James looked up in the sky and, you know, all the clouds are stagnant. And there was one cloud kind of over his starting area that was gray. And he was like, I could write an essay about that cloud, the symbolism of the one gray cloud.
Be the cloud, James. Be the gray cloud.
Your GDC comment completely went past me. I forgot because someone thought I was John Blow at GDC last
year. Oh, really? I forgot about that.
Yeah. I guess if I, like, shave my head, there's some resemblance.
Just walk around with, like, your big pea/apple juice bottle cosplaying as John Blow.
You know you're going to see that at some convention somewhere.
I hope so.
That was funny. If you guys didn't see that, he posted a joke on Twitter where it appeared that Jonathan Blow had made a makeshift catheter and pee jug. It was
leading up to the game coming out.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. But
we hope was a joke, at least.
No, I hope he's finally nailed it. I mean, who hasn't thought about that at, like, rock concerts or sporting events? You know, having to go to the toilet is a huge inconvenience.
Oh God, we're moving on for the sake of sanity, and we're going to move on to what I'm super excited about for today, which is our Cat Fantastic quiz. For those of you new to the PC Gamer Show, we do a quiz every once in a while. This has been the first time we've been able to do it in a while.
Why have we got to answer? Why can't chat answer?
Chat will answer too, but our Cat Fantastic quiz is a quiz where I try to make it funny. It doesn't always work, but it is always silly. And this week, if you didn't see, somebody, let me pull up his name because he deserves the credit that we are going to give him. His name is Pilla on Steam, or Pillatomic on SourceForge. He came up with a program that allows the Steam controller, which we've got down here, so this is live, and we've got a zoomed-in video, but you see it. If I put my hand there, yeah. Anyway, it vibrates the haptic feedback sensors, which are in the two touchpads of the controller right there and there, at specific pitches and specific frequencies, and it makes the controller sound like it's playing music. And you can put any MIDI file into these. So I put every MIDI file into them last night, and I went through and I edited a lot, and for about an hour before the show, we couldn't get it working, so I was freaking out, and I really hope this is working. But for an example, here is what a tone sounds like. So that was the Final Fantasy VII victory music.
It really struggles on those low notes.
It struggles on either kind of like high or low. But that was the controller actually vibrating, right? That was not any sort of speaker or anything. And I'll do it again. So what we're going to do is I've arranged six kind of 30 to 45 second songs, clips from songs. And these are popular PC gaming songs. Some of them you'll recognize immediately. Some of them you will probably never guess in a million years. But you guys at home, watching or listening along, try to hear what you think the song is being played through the Steam controller. And then write your answer in chat or think it to yourself quietly if you're watching on YouTube or listening on iTunes. And you guys can guess. So if you guys know it immediately, Tim and Tyler, if you know it immediately, like, hold off just for a few seconds, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it might be hard to hear, so.
All right. So quiet. here is song number one.
I mean, I like it.
Should I say it or no?
Do you know it?
Yeah. That was a gimme.
Yeah, that is a gimme. Don't worry. The next one is actually a gimme for Tim. So. Yeah.
Well, that was Still Alive. That was from...
That was Still Alive.
That was from the end of Portal.
End of Portal 1.
And I've heard it about 18 million times paired with cake memes in the past, what, how many years has Portal been out?
Oh. Well, it seemed like the appropriate thing to start a Steam controller with was Portal.
No, of course, right? Yeah.
That was good, though, that one, though.
Yeah. I I spent a lot of time arranging these, I'm not going to lie. I was up pretty late last night making sure this worked.
Tom hasn't slept in 2 days, so he could make a video game controller play music for us.
And the funny thing is that the guy who made this pillow, I think he put it out only a couple weeks ago. So the fact that I think I'm the first person to really dive into doing this as in-depth as we are. But let's go number two.
Alright, I know this one.
I'm glad you got this one.
It's the only one I'm gonna get.
And I had to cut it.
Because I think I only got it because you said, I'm going to know this one. And when I was listening for it, it is the Hearthstone music.
It is. Yeah. It is. That is the Hearthstone main theme.
Otherwise, if you hadn't have, teased me, I would have probably said, Ghouls and Goblins or something.
Yeah, everything has got that kind of that weird feeling to it because of that. So that was the Hearthstone theme for anybody who guessed
it. Did chat get that?
At least one person did.
Okay.
Let's see. Max Ursa said Hearthstone in theme. Yeah, we got a couple right ones there. I think there's a little bit of a delay on our chat, unfortunately, so
okay.
I'm going to see your guesses late. So let's move on to number three. This one, I promise you, none of you are going to get. Neither of you are going to get. But I'm a very big fan of this game, and there's probably going to be one person out there who actually recognizes it.
No, I'll use this information.
And all I can say about this is, yes, it is on PC. So it made it valid. This one has a little bit of an intro. A couple of them do, actually. I love that bass line underneath.
It sounds familiar, but...
Man, when it hits those discordant notes, I love it. So we did get it. Yes, a bunch of people in the chat. That is right. Percy was the first one to get it with Sonic the Hedgehog. And Addist Twitch actually said it. The name of the song, it's the Escape from the City. It's City Escape. It is the first song of the first level of Sonic Adventure 2 Battle. And it is probably the best.
You could have at least given us the Green Hill Zone music, given us a chance. Yeah. Jesus.
But that Sonic's not on PC.
Oh,
Sonic Adventure 2 Battle. Also, that's one of the best known modern Sonic songs.
You could emulate it, right? That counts.
Tim's shining endorsement of emulation here on the show.
I mean, it would be illegal, but
yeah, I'm super glad people got that one because as Russeru says, gotta go fast.
I would have brought my friend Brett Elston in for this. He would have got all of them. He does a video game music podcast called VG Empire. I've just plugged him inadvertently.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe we gotta get. I gotta come on with my singing Steam controller and test.
Yeah,
him.
That'd
be fun. But let's go. Let's go number four. This might be a gimme too. Looks totally stumped.
Tim's trying to cheat and look at the chat.
I'm covering it.
I don't know what it's trying to tell me. No.
Everyone, a lot of people got that one. Addis Twitch was the first one with the TF2 theme. That was the Team Fortress 2 theme song.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I.
That's why we need Evan.
Yeah.
That was actually the first one I made after doing the National Anthem, which we have a video of this playing the National Anthem, by the way, which you can look up. It's great.
You better put Skyrim in, Tom. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, so actually, Skyrim's not in. I tried to, but I couldn't find... A big part of this was I couldn't find MIDIs for certain songs, right? I also tried to get a song from FTL in there and the Bastion song, but like the MIDIs and the Monkey Island song, but the MIDIs just kind of didn't play out for those. It takes a surprising amount of work to get these to work.
I have a bad memory for music, so this is dangerous.
Let's go number 5, second to last. It does have an actual part to it. Tyler's singing along.
That's because I know it, but I can't.
It's not Spelunky, is it?
No.
It's older than that.
Castlevania?
This feels like I'm thinking of Warcraft, but I don't know. I don't know, Tom. I know it, but I...
That actually was right. It was Warcraft 2, and Restory 21 got Warcraft 2 right off the bat. That was the...
Well, that was good from you, though.
Yeah, yeah, you nailed it. You did.
Hey.
You got in the ballpark, at least.
See, I'm too nervous to, like, be confident about my answers. So.
That was good.
Yeah, that was the Alliance, the first Alliance theme.
I played a lot of
Warcraft 2.
Yeah.
I was hoping you'd get that one, Tim, because it's also one of the songs in Hearthstone, like, when you're waiting for a game.
Is it?
Yeah, it's one of them.
I'm tone deaf, Tom. This is completely wasted on me. This segment.
No, it's, having you sit there and look confused is totally worth
now.
It. Yeah, right. It's totally worth it. So we're going to go to the last one. This one has a long, buzzy intro, but I'm not going to lie. I'm by far the proudest of getting this one to work because it took the most work. And, oh, God, I'm just so... I was almost...
Is it Doom?
Crying from laughter. No, the creator did Doom in his first video, though, so I didn't want to do that one. I was actually crying from laughter when I got this to work because it was just, oh, man. So this is our final one. To those of you out there who have been doing well, good job. Let's see if you can get this. And it's got a long intro, I warn you.
This one.
Oh yeah, I know this one. But I'll give it some time. That's Baba Yetu.
That was Baba Yetu from the title theme from Civilization IV.
I didn't know it.
It was the only game song to win a Grammy.
And I believe Smoke Mate got that one first, but he said Civ 5, so never mind. It was Foobs with Civ 4. There you go.
I've listened to
it. Yeah, that was the only video game soundtrack song or video game song to win a Grammy. Or at least the first, if I'm not sure any have since then.
I've listened to worse bands than this controller.
I know, right? It's surprisingly good.
The kind of bands I know you and James Davenport go to, your weird noise
rock
bands.
Less musical than this controller.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I could not believe when I got Baba Yetu to work. And there's a couple of them. Like, Baba Yetu took a lot of work, so it doesn't go all the way through. But a couple of the other ones, I have, like, the whole song.
Yeah.
Like, the Sonic one, I could just press play, and it would play for 3 minutes and sound pretty decent.
I got that one probably because, like, about 2 months ago, I thought about that song and put it on YouTube and just, like, looped it for, like, 2 hours while I was, like, doing some work or something. It's very uplifting.
Yeah, it's a great song.
I believe it's actually the Lord's Prayer translated into a language I'm not going to remember specifically.
Really?
There's that weird thing on, I guess there's loads of weird things on YouTube, but have you seen there's like people will take a song and like loop it for like 10 hours?
Yeah, and you can just put it
on. You just go, I'm really in the mood for that song. I'm going to listen to
for
it
10
for
hours.
An entire working day. Yeah, or whatever.
Well, there's also like you can find like just Starship Enterprise sounds that just goes for like 10 hours, like just background, like TNG background noise where it's just like beep,
nice.
Beep, beep, and the engine drone. I like that.
I like it, yeah.
James in the chat says, shut it, Tyler. Godspeed is great. and then also Scarfington asks, what actually went into making the MIDIs? Like, what did you have to do? Basically, what I had to do was And you guys can do this too if you want. I will post the link to the Steam forum post into the chat, and you can also find this on PCGamer.com. But you go here, you download this little program. It's a little tricky because you have to run it through the command prompt because it's like it's just a ramshackle little thing that this guy made, and it's great. I love that he made it. But to go into the MIDIs, how it happens is it plays... MIDIs are broken into channels, and it plays the first channel on one of the sensors and the second channel on the other sensor. And so what I had to do was I had to open a program, a free program called MIDI Editor, download a MIDI that somebody made, because I don't write music. You know, I'm not a musician. So I download a MIDI someone would make. I would take the harmony, the melody, put it on the first channel, take everything else off of the first channel, put the harmony, the melody on the first channel, and then take kind of whatever I thought would be best to complement that and put that on the second channel and then resave the file. And then when you plug it in, it sounds pretty good because you got the melody and whatever, you know, would go with it. So on Baba Yetu, you know, that second part was just like that drone that kind of paste it the entire time, but then on something like the Warcraft one, it was this whole different thing. And I think it came out pretty good. It's surprising how crisp the sound is, actually, for just being vibrations.
So do you prefer the Steam controller as a MIDI player or as a controller?
So the funny MIDI thing is, I genuinely am thinking about buying a Steam controller just so I can keep making Steam controller songs.
Come on, though.
I don't really like the Steam controller as a controller very much, this is brilliant.
You know you could make MIDI songs that play out of speakers as well. There's quite a lot of software for that.
Is that really as good, Tyler? Is that really worth it?
You're just going to have, like, 10 Steam controllers, like, dangling, creating a symphony of wonderful, vibrating music.
Well, I appreciate you guys sitting through that very weird thing. Thank you, everyone,
that was good.
Watching on Twitch and guessing along as well. I'm pleased with how well both of you guys and the Twitch chat did. I'm really glad someone got
someone. I got one right, Tom.
Well, okay. But you almost had a couple.
The one that was hard still.
Yeah. yeah, so thank you very much.
I
was disappointed that I couldn't get the Skyrim theme to work.
That's probably too many voices in that.
Too many harmonies, actually. It was basic because the problem is the controller can only play one note at a time. So if you have a track that needs three notes playing in harmony, you either have to cut out and find the one specific note, which I'm not very good at and takes a long time, or you kind of just can't use it. Okay. It just buzzes loudly.
Don't know your chords.
Yeah, and I don't know my chords, so this was a little bit of a challenge. But that's we can move on from this week's Weird Cat Fantastic. I hope you guys liked it. Go to PCGamer.com/podcast and click this post. Will be the first one. And let us know if you want to see the Steam controller musical quiz come back anytime or what songs you might want to see on it. And maybe we can bring this one back because I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's the first time we've mic'd up a controller, I think.
Yeah.
On the show.
I love that, actually, that let me just show this to the camera. We put like a little clip mic on the controller in order to get this to work. So
it's our fourth guest for the show.
Yeah, it is our fourth guest.
James is actually he's working on like an update to our like best controllers article, which is going to take into account the Steam controller and the Xbox One Elite controller and Razer Sabertooth one as well.
Yeah, so I like that Sabertooth as well, so we'll see how that goes. Is he going to include the musical properties of the Steam controller in the review?
He hasn't made that explicit yet, but James is very thorough, so I'm sure that'll be given due attention.
All right, and let's move on. Let's talk about Her Story 2. So real quick, if anybody does have questions about this or anything, just wait till... You know, we'll get to the Twitch chat Q&A pretty soon, so you'll have your times to ask them. But Her Story 2 got announced, and I have not played Her Story, but you guys I know both really liked it.
Yeah.
It's a good game.
Are you excited for Her Story 2? Do you feel like it's going to be drawn out and kind of milking it, or what are your feelings?
What I'm most excited about is now being able to like fend off accusations of the game being hipster bait in the comments and not a real game.
That's
like
really
another 18 months of doing that should be fun. Now the game was for those who don't know, the original game was a detective game, effectively, whereby you were investigating some mysterious happenings, and the medium through which you were doing this was a police database, which had a number of interview clips, most of which were pretty short. I would say they were kind of between 30 seconds and a couple of minutes at the longest, all with seemingly the same person, the the her of the title. And you would search for stuff in the database, like you might put in, I don't know, wedding ring or car crash or whatever else. Those aren't spoilers, they're just things that popped in my head. And then, like, clips which were kind of tagged with those words would then be shown to you, and you would sort of, in this kind of fractured way, put the story together. And it was recorded, so Sam Barlow was the developer, and the actress was a lady called Viva Seafoot. And it was just the two of them really did it in collaboration over the course of, I think, a couple of weeks. I interviewed him after we'd reviewed it. And as much as there was, like, some kind of tedious debate as to whether it was a real game or not, anything you play with, I would say, is a real game. And you did definitely... There was definitely a sense of play between you and the game.
And if you didn't enjoy it, you know, that's something else entirely. There are games that, you know, are not controversial about whether or not they're games that you don't enjoy, you know. Yeah. Just not enjoying it doesn't mean it's not a game. It's fine, though.
What kind of interests me is, like, what he does next with it. 'Cause my impression from speaking to him is that he won't just, like, go, here's another database with some more interviews and fill your boots. I'm sure there'll be, like, a twist on the formula. And it certainly felt like it's ripe for kind of being twisted and changed a little bit.
Colin R80 in the chat asks, didn't we find out her story before?
Oh, well, that's an interesting point. Like, my guess is, the thing I'm curious about is, like, will he use the same actress? Because they obviously have, like, a good working relationship, and maybe he'll use her to tell a completely different story, and that'll be the thing. Or, equally, and maybe more likely, he'll get perhaps multiple people or a different protagonist.
I mean, I heard the news, but I didn't quite read it. Is he actually calling it Her Story 2, or is that just a working title?
I think I think all he's shown is, like, a script with all the text blanked out, and it just says Her Story 2 at the top.
That's what kind of confused me, because it seems like the title Her Story was kind of just a clever, simple way it really sums up what it is. It's a clever title. It's about a woman who you're interviewing, and you're trying to piece her story together. So you kind of have to say the title to explain what the game is. It kind of seems weird to be like, so is it specifically another woman's story, and the title still works as Her Story too? Or is, like, the concept of, like, doing this, like, interview, searching, and piecing things together, like, it just seems weird that it's Her Story too, if that's the actual title. But I don't know.
It'll be the same. She'll just be on a space station this time.
Yeah.
The law of sequels.
There'll be multiplayer. And
I'm interested just because, as much as anything, like, since playing that and then playing that that garbage detective game, I forget the name of, like, I've got a real hankering for playing stuff that's detective-y. I'm trying to get Tyler to get me the Agatha Christie game to try out.
Yeah, I'll... now it's on record on Twitch, so I have to email them. I think we all have, like, been really excited about playing more detective games. Like, that's what I liked about Her Story. I liked that I felt like I was, even though I knew there were thousands of people elsewhere, like, doing exactly the same thing, and that I could go read what they discovered on forums. And I read a ton of theories later. I liked the idea that I was just, like, the only one piecing together this puzzle and figuring out this murder, and that when I came away at the end and I was like, oh, I know what happened.
So according to those weird guys over at PCGamer.com, Her Story 2 won't have anything to do with the first installment, and basically besides that, the only thing that's been confirmed is that it will also feature FMV and live acting.
Yeah, I mean, my assumption would be that, exactly as he's already confirmed, it would have no relationship because that story is finished.
Yeah.
I think he, like I was saying, that he could use the same actress in a different role.
Do you think that if the actor or actress that he does choose for the sequel, if it is different, do you think that has a chance of just breaking the game right there if they're not as good?
No, I think without wanting to do her out of work, I think it would be more interesting to have a completely different person. I think it would be, for me anyway, even more interesting if it was multiple characters and you were kind of exploring in that way. I mean, like, the police thing makes for an interesting contrivance, but maybe he can do it without it being police interviews this time. Maybe there are other, like, forms of clips, different places you go to get different types of information.
So you're most interested mainly in this piecing together something kind of by your own choice and your own path. that's what interested you about the first game to carry over.
I'd say
over
it was
second.
Everything, but well, I mean, it was that the concept was novel, but the acting was also great, and the writing was also great. So it needs all of those things. It needs great acting and writing, and sort of the novelty of the idea. But
look, we were talking about puzzles earlier, right? And you're excited to play a bunch of maze puzzles. I'm much more interested in doing puzzles that are like, you know, riffs on real world things. And like, you know, most of us have grown up and spent our lives watching police procedurals and seeing people do detective work and trying to put things together and look for motives and stuff. That's what I think is interesting, more than trying to come up with logic puzzles about lunar phases. I don't give a shit about that.
Tim wants to be in Law and Order forever.
Big CSI fan, Tyler. What can I say?
So is this kind of like, I'm trying to think of other indie weird games like Her Story that have gone on to get a sequel like this. I know that Gone Home is kind of getting, I don't know if you'd call it a sequel.
Tacoma.
Yeah, Tacoma.
You'd call it a spiritual successor, I guess.
Right.
A follow-up.
Yeah. But it's encouraging to see that the developer of Her Story garnered enough support from this weird idea that got a lot of flack for being what it was to he can move on and make another game. That's encouraging to see.
I saw one person in the comments as well saying, oh, yeah, you know, some artistic vision, they're already making a sequel, like as if the notion of having like a follow-up somehow gets you struck off the artistic roster.
You ever heard of Godfather 2?
Godfather 2, yeah. Argument over.
Yeah.
Aliens is the other easy win.
Yeah. And Amberground asks, will it be too repetitive with the sequel? And I think you were touching somewhat on that, Tim. Like, if you postured a lot of ideas of like, oh, this is what he could do differently, this would be interesting. If he didn't do any of that, and it was basically the exact same thing, but with maybe a different actor and a different story, would that be disappointing at all?
I think if the quality of the story was good enough, it would still be enjoyable. But like, I would be like just amazed if, because he seems like he's got such a fertile imagination and so many ideas. I don't think like as a developer he would want to just go, oh, I'll just bang another one of these out. He's not making Battlefield.
And I'd say Telltale hasn't really done much to change its basic formula. Like each series it does will have something a little bit different. Like, oh, in this one you have a like one different kind of decision to make, but we keep coming back to them for the writing, the acting, the sort of directing of the scenes, for that like basic decision making that they kind of figured out in The Walking Dead. So, you know, I wouldn't say like Tales from the Borderlands was any massive shift, like as far as systematically, you know, from The Walking Dead. But I still loved it. So, yeah, I think probably just like another really good story with a good actor would be fine. But like you said, I think Barlow will experiment and do something different.
I think it would be interesting as well because there was, do you remember in Tyler, in the first one, there was the, you could see the database represented visually and see how many of the files you'd unlocked. And people, a lot of play was made out of. There was like a missing file. And I think it turned out actually to be nothing in the end. But I wonder if like mixing the FMV stuff up with like being able to imagine you could like interrogate some like traffic footage or some CCTV footage of like a mall where like you had to like spot that something had changed or had happened or like looking for timestamps being wrong. I think the more, and maybe this isn't for his, you know, we're just shooting this shit about ideas for this sort of game really.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of games where you're doing detective work around that sort of stuff with all sorts of different clues.
I think you should be able to get up from your computer and get a cup of coffee when it starts to get really late, you know?
Yeah.
And there should maybe be some like RPG elements in
smoking
that.
Furiously at your desk.
Like you have to increase your stamina.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that would be wise. I don't know. I mean, if he's looking for input, this is what
your
I got.
Ripe ideas could be, here.
It could be a co-op game. Choose the right partner.
So you were saying that you played it basically co-op, right?
Yeah, because my brain's not big enough. So, yeah, like Rachel, my other half, and I, we played it together, and then because I'm old, I got tired, and she kept going.
Yeah.
So cracked the case, blew it wide open.
These games, it's not on PC, but I played, what's that PS4 horror game?
The slasher movie one.
Dawn.
Yeah,
Until Dawn. Yeah, I played that with my other half, and it games like that, like Her Story, like that weird detective game we talked about, are great for just playing next to someone where because it doesn't really matter who's controlling it, except unless there's quick time events.
Yeah.
Until dawn. But and she was good at those. And I was
well, you get to debate decisions as well. I think that's the fun.
That's the fun is like, oh, you know, you should search for this, or you should, you know, say yes or no to this. And actually, we got into arguments. So
that's what happened with us for Divinity. Except you can disagree in Divinity, and then you do a Rochambeau game to decide who's right.
See, that's good that they worked that in.
Talking of, I don't know if you want to talk about this, Tom, but like not on PC. We did a story on the site today about like a Quantum Break getting listed in Brazil for PC, which
right.
is the Remedy. It's like the blend of sort of science fictiony, time travely. I feel like I should know more about it, but don't. But
no, but I feel like when it was first revealed, it was one of those games where it's like. It just looked kind of weird, and there was like a lot of talk about.
I have some recollection that there was going to be like a TV element attached to it. I don't know if that's still a thing.
I think that
it's not.
Is, but it's very Remedy to be like it's this big strange idea. But
I was really into Alan Wake.
Yeah, Alan Wake is one of those weird ones where I didn't finish it, but where it's like I'm kind of playing it. I'm like, this isn't very good, but also
it's kind of fun.
It's kind of like it.
Yeah, I finished I didn't finish American Nightmare, but we finished.
I still haven't played Deadly Premonition, which is another one of people who say, like, this isn't... it's one of Suarez's games where people are like, this is not a well-designed game, but you really should play it. So it's wonderful.
I love when that distinction can be made.
But yeah, I mean, I was going to be surprised if Remedy wasn't going to release their new game on PC. So now we just have a rumor that maybe it is, but I'm like... I would back that rumor. Like, I think it's probably...
I would back that rumor very heavily indeed.
Yeah.
I think it was somebody over in the UK for PC Gamer was saying that the Brazilian ratings board tends to be pretty on the nose with their things.
Those guys steady as a rock.
Yeah.
if you want to rely on anyone,
if you want a game ratings board, you talk to the Brazilians. Yeah. They'll rate the hell out of that game.
The
game will be rated to the moon.
So let's move on to our Twitch chat Q&A. Let's open it up. If you are watching live, use the tag @PCGamer in the Twitch chat, and we will see your questions and answer them if we so choose. If you're a subscriber, see, we have a bunch of subscribers in the chat today. If you are a subscriber, we will definitely be taking your questions. And if you are not watching live, then you are always welcome to come join us Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific time right here at twitch.tv/PCGamer. I also want to say that if you did... miss anything with the haptic feedback and the Steam controller singing, you can always check us out on youtube.com/PCGamer, and you can find the VOD of this and listen to your heart's content at the songs we played. Although I think I'm going to end the show with one longer one as well. So
is it Skyrim?
No, it's not Skyrim. I couldn't get Skyrim to work.
Come on, man.
I'm sorry.
It sounded like you tried hard.
Blame the middies.
Yeah, you could have stayed up a couple hours later. Yeah.
Ouch, man. Right? Jeez. I work toil away in the MIDI fields, and I come home to this. This is what I get.
You'll never.
Wall of Sleep asks Mafia 3. What are your impressions?
Oh well, that's not one I've had the chance to play.
Yeah,
or anything. Seems cool. I know there's some weird controversy around it, but that seems pointless.
Has anyone on the team played it? I don't recall.
I know very little about it. All I know is that I used to love the Godfather game.
The EA one?
Yeah. And that one's basically just a GTA clone set in the Godfather times, but I'm hankering lately for a mafia kind of mafioso game.
So. I watched Godfather 1 and 2 weekends running.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, so both movies?
Kind of out of sync. They're on HBO at the moment.
Okay.
So we watched them in bits and then kind of put it all together. But yeah.
So you watched them like you played Her Story.
Yeah. Fractured, disjointed eye. I mean, I'm really up for... I think that sort of setting is a bit like World War II in shooters. Like, if you have too much of it, it lapses into pastiche and you get bored of it. But then if it goes away for long enough, like, I think people would probably quite like a good World War II shooter now. And in the same way, I would quite like a good 50s or whatever it's set, 40s crime game.
Yeah. Twitchy Rachel asks, which game makes you the angriest? I feel like she knows the answer to that one for Tim.
I feel like I've already covered that. It's hostile.
We did a post last week about our rage quit moments. And I honestly couldn't think of one. I usually, when I notice myself getting too upset, will stop and will back off of a game.
Good old level-headed Tom.
I know. I don't like being angry, man.
I think games make me feel sad more than angry. I get like
Hearthstone?
Really, yeah, I feel really sad if I lose.
Do you sad quit?
Yeah, sad quit.
Oh, man. I don't know. I guess what I'm playing right now is Rocket League. I get kind of angry, but I'm always kind of having fun. That's the brilliance of that game. Even when I'm, like, being shut out, I'm always enjoying it, even if I know I can't come back. But I do, like, with the mic off, yell at my teammates sometimes. If it's just, like, every time I go in for a shot, they just kind of jump up and bump it out of the way. And I was like, I had a shot. Why? You didn't have to do that. So I'll be yelling at them, but not actually at them, because I'm not the kind of dude.
Have you ever, like, fully raged at another person in a game? I don't feel like you would, but...
Oh, like, just really gone off on them, yeah. Like, over voice chat or text?
Yeah.
No. A lot of people have raged at me. I'll kind of reply snarkily if they're being, like, if they're raging at me in my, like, I'm not actually mad, you're mad sort of way that's, like, where I'm, like...
Your mom's mad.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Daregard asks, is there anyone not excited for XCOM 2? No. And we've talked about XCOM 2 a lot on the show, and I've talked about XCOM 2 because I've played it a lot. And from what I've played, and I'm really excited to play more of it. The only thing I will say, because I don't want to, you know, just be saying everything good about it, but I really was put off by how many bugs were in it when I played it. But I did play it, you know, a month and a half before launch. So they've had a month since I played it to kind of iron that stuff out. But when I played it, it was like...
kind of buggy.
It was kind of buggy. Not to the point where it ruined my experience of the game, but...
If you were... All right, here's my rule.
Yeah.
You can only play for the rest of this year XCOM or the new Tomb Raider. You can play other games as well, but you have to choose one of those two games. What would it be?
I'd go XCOM. The whole idea of XCOM is replayability.
Yeah, it's got to be XCOM. But I'm not that into the new Tomb Raiders. I think James would have a harder time because he likes Tomb Raider a lot.
James is playing it next to me yesterday. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this. Presumably we are, but it looked really good looking.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think everyone's excited for XCOM 2. It's one of those things where, like, when Civilization 5 first came out, whatever you felt about it, disappointment or not, I think it's become a great game with the expansions and the mods. But when it first came out, it was like, who wasn't, like... wow, this, like, time sink that I'm going to, like, play over and over again is about to come out. Can't wait.
James in the chat says Tomb Raider, actually.
He'd choose Tomb Raider.
Nice. Also, Hoob Jedi says, I've missed Tyler Wilde's voice. Too soothing.
Hello.
Jumping off of the Tomb Raider question, subscriber JBJ Blaze is asking, what are your impressions of, as of yet, for Rise of the Tomb Raider? And I haven't gotten hands on it yet, but I'm excited to. I'm really...
I played the first level on Xbox One.
Yeah.
And then my other half, Rachel, has completed it in the front room.
I mean,
she really liked it.
We've essentially heard that it's pretty darn good, so it's just a
matter of... The Xbox version.
Unless we think all those reviews are wrong.
Unless all those reviews are wrong.
Completely misguided. So,
or if the port is terrible. But the first Tomb Raider was a very good port.
Yeah.
So... you know, obviously that doesn't mean that Rise of the Tomb Raider is going to guaranteed be a good port, but it's definitely encouraging.
Yeah,
I mean, we've got code.
Yeah.
And there hasn't been any, oh my god, it's shit.
haven't heard anything negative yet, so.
Ask James in chat, he's playing it.
Or ask PCGamer.com tomorrow.
The review?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. So there you go. PCGamer.com tomorrow if you want to hear extended thoughts
prediction,
on Tomb Raider.
Prediction, not going to be a disaster.
Okay, that's a good prediction. Infinite Zero asks, are you going to be playing the Division beta this weekend? What are you looking forward to do in it?
It's an excellent question. Christopher and I were trying to get codes this morning. I think some of the guys on the UK team have already got codes, so we're hopefully going to play it this weekend and write something up early next week. Probably no one other than Rachel, but anyone who knows me knows that on the side I play quite a bit of Destiny, so I'm curious to know whether it is going to be the next jumping off point for that sort of community, because a lot of people in that community are very angry at the moment, and they're looking for a new MMORPG shooter acronym superhero to to grind. So I don't know, like the thing that I'm looking forward to trying it, because I think it was one of those games, how many E3s ago was it announced, like three, maybe
a while,
two or three,
because it got delayed for at least a year.
And it's kind of weird because when everyone first saw that footage, and it was kind of the post plague New York and people hunkered down behind snowy cars shooting out windows and stuff, it looked really great at the time. I would say, like, now when you look at games like Tomb Raider, it doesn't look quite as like blow your balls off special. That's not to say it won't be a good game. I was curious to see a lot of people who were in the alpha, which ran a few weeks ago, saying the enemies were super bullet spongy, and that is like one of my absolute pet hates in any game involving guns, which makes me a bit wary of it. But yeah,
I'm interested. Did you just say pet hates?
Yeah.
Instead of pet peeves?
Yeah.
So it's like a worse pet peeve?
No, it's just an expression, right?
Okay, I just want to...
You never heard pet hate?
No, I haven't.
I pet despise bullet sponges. We were talking about this before, how I like lots of weak enemies. Like, I like the first few waves in Killing Floor 2 more than I like constantly running away from something, turning,
chipping away and a bit of its health.
And nothing really happens, and then you run away some more and then turn and shoot it. I like to just be surrounded by guys where it's like one shot pops up.
My Left 4 Dead was so fun,
shooting
right?
Gallery.
See, I've never minded bullet sponge enemies as long as the items and skills that you use to kill them are interesting enough.
I think you can have bullet sponge bosses if they're surrounded by additional enemies who are like easy to kind of like bubble wrap squish.
Yeah.
Because then you feel like... All games are trying to sell you a fantasy, right? The thing I think that is wrong with Far Cry is it doesn't sell you enough of the fantasy of being a savage caveman. And if I'm like in post-apocalyptic New York with an assault rifle, I don't want to be having to empty like six clips into something to kill it, because that just feels like a bad time. But I'm judging this based purely on hearsay. So, Chris and I and a few of the others hopefully play it this weekend, and we will report back next week.
Yeah, I don't know what to think of it from what I've seen so far.
What does chat think? Are people excited about Division?
If you're excited about the Division, let us know. I'm going to take one more question while you guys are responding to that because of the delay. But subscriber Catatonic Sheep asks, anyone played the Torment Tides of Numenara beta?
Not me.
I don't think any of us here have, but that's not for...
I think maybe Andy Chalk, our news person, was looking forward to it.
Yeah, so he's very looking forward to that game. So maybe we'll have something from him on the site in coming days. But it's... Yeah, I don't think it's out of lack of what's the word, like, faith? Or because the game looks very interesting and very cool to me. It's just I've never been a huge CRPG kind of guy. It's just not really been the types of games I'm interested in. I didn't play Pillars of Eternity past, like, 4 hours or something like that.
Well,
you played a ton of the other one.
You loved Divinity.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Divinity is so different to me. Mm. Divinity was the one of those games that appealed to me, and I think a large part of it was... I'm not sure. I think the combat was just... I really liked that it was just hard turn-based in Divinity. When I played Pillars, it was super stressful for me to be playing in real time and then pause to set actions and then playing in real time and then pause to set actions. I was not a fan of that combat, and I think the combat in Divinity, and also, honestly, the co-op in Divinity... Let's be real, if Divinity was not co-op, I wouldn't probably have played all the way through that game.
Yeah, we have an opinion piece that went up on the site months ago that I tend to agree with, saying it was from Jody McGregor, one of our writers in Australia, saying that that he really doesn't like mixed real-time turn-based combat, and I sort of tend to agree. I would prefer like
one or the other.
Real-time combat or turn-based combat, but the thing where it's like, try to position your guys while it's paused and then go real-time and like run up and give them orders. I never really liked that because you're also like, you have to deal with their pathfinding and how that's going to work out.
Oh, Flowmaster in the chat actually says that I'm in luck because Torment is turn-based.
There
so I will probably, like, that instantly makes me more interested in checking
it out. I like turn-based.
Yeah.
I really like turn-based.
I think it really depends on the CRPG for me, but we'll be covering Torment. Yeah. So Tides of, wait.
Numenara.
I always want to say Numeria for
some reason. I just want to say Numenor, but I think that's from something else.
Numen.
As for Division reactions, we get skeptical of the Division. Someone just says nope. The Division will be a division by zero, says Mr. Hertz, which is either brutal or undefined. Yeah, I'm not sure there. Let's see. Some other people Six Gunsmith says, mildly interested in The Division. If it's reviewed well, probably get it. But I don't think that'll happen. So that's still skeptical.
The other thing which makes me curious about The Division is, like, let's say hypothetically it's a roaring success, quickly builds up a big user base across console and PC. How is a team which has already had to delay that game a couple of times and is not a studio the size of Bungie, going to create enough content to keep feeding a community like that? Because that's been like the story of Destiny, is like they just can't make stuff quick enough.
Yeah,
and everyone gets cross.
Yeah, that's kind of my skepticism for The Division 2, is that I think if I picked up and started playing The Division, I would enjoy it. I think it looks like the type of game where I don't mind many of the problems I've heard about it so far. I like the aesthetic. I like the vibe it's going for. But the big question in me that I'm really skeptical about is, how long would I play that game for? I don't think I would sit through it for very long.
I think
long.
There'll also be the tension between, with a game like that, almost invariably, it'll be much more fun with a group of your friends.
Yeah.
And then... because, you know, you're going to want to play different amounts. Like, how much fun does it retain when you're playing on your own?
Yeah.
Grinding for gear.
JBJ Blaze says, Division looks pretty, otherwise no affirmed opinion. And it also says, Division's not an MMO, is it? It's kind of an MMO. There are instanced areas are, like, online.
And it's basically like a third-person shooter with MMO elements.
Yeah.
You know? It's not a hard... It's certainly not like... Because it's not like a subscription-based MMO, for sure.
Yeah, it's like... It has a PvP area that you can go into and then try to extract loot from.
I mean, there's loot full stop. You level up, you play in... as. I don't know if there'll be like equivalents of raids or not. I don't know if they've talked about that.
Well, and then you have the PvE stuff where it's like you and a group of friends and... I think you can, like, run into other players there. Yeah, but
they can't kill you.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're just competing for... I guess we have to find out.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out this weekend. Yeah.
There are certainly a lot of questions.
Well, I think that's all the time we have. And actually, Keegster13 caps it off by saying, looks like tired, Wild.
I yawned earlier.
Yeah.
And Keegan... that bastard.
So we can... we're going to wrap up for the day. As I say goodbye to you, we're going to be playing a song as well. I do want to say thank you very much, everyone, for joining us on the PC Gamer Show. We will be back next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time, as usual, at twitch.tv/PCGamer. Thank you very much for joining us and watching on YouTube or on iTunes or wherever you were. Tim, Tyler, thank you for joining me again as well.
Of course.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
I'm pleased you got Skyrim working, Tom. Well, good job.
Oh, you troll. We'll see you next week, guys.